Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslowski. Boom, there it is. I thought you knew. No. Wait. I already did that one. Okay, how about this instead? One, two, three, four. I got something brand new for your head. This is episode number 78. What up? Thank you for joining me for this episode. You're far, far too kind. But really, I enjoy and respect your time and attention. And I'm thinking, hey, this may just be me that it's toodaloo time. Yes, toodaloo time. Wait, toodaloo time? Yeah, specifically the kind of toodaloo time, also known as the alias of a wonderful person in iTunes who left me this recent review. The subject, love, love, love. Toodaloo, this one's for you. You wrote, am I gushing, Joel? Well, I really do enjoy your podcast. Your style feels like it's you and me just chatting. And I really do like how you have a variety of folks on the show who aren't necessarily down the line entirely with how you think or live your life, yet you show each person great respect and seem truly interested in hearing their point of view. I'll keep coming back for more. Keep up the good work. Toodaloo, I do this for you. I do this for anybody who's interested in simplifying, slowing down, having better relationships, getting a bit funky. Oh, I love doing this stuff, and I really want to do more of it. And I have to say, I'm in a little bit of a minor tizzy to get this podcast episode out the digital door before I head to Portland, Oregon for a family vacation and the World Domination Summit. Can I get an aw yeah for that one? Do it. Can I hear it? Let me hear it. Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. People are shaking their heads right now. This dude is ridiculous. Yes. Yes, I am. So let's see if I can get my hustle on. I need to get some Simple Rev email newsletters written, and I need to get some other podcast episodes ready for you so I can publish them while I'm gone and when I come back. And you know what? Let's just hit it with my guest for this episode, Vernon Foster. Here we go. What up, everybody? So glad you're here. Vernon Foster's put the flow back in your ears. That's right. My guest is Vernon Foster, a man who operates in the land of sound. He's been a DJ, music event organizer, a Toastmasters pro, and is currently the chief podcast officer at Pod Parrot. He's also a part-time nomad, a self-proclaimed modern-day philosopher, and is on a mission to revolutionize the way brands and small businesses communicate with their customers. Word up, my man. Welcome to the show.
What's going on, Joel? Thanks for having me here, brother.
All right, dude. I love the enthusiasm. We're going to take it from the top like we always do. Start with the seeds of awesomeness so that people can understand who you are and why you've come to be the person you are. Can you tell us one or two things about your environment growing up? Maybe even an experience you had in your youth that helped form you, that helped shape you into the man you are now.
Yeah, sure. Two things that really come to mind is, first and foremost, my father, and not to get, you know, all soppy or sad on you guys, but my father was killed over in the Persian Gulf aboard the USS Stark in 1987. I was 2 years old at that time, and we are stationed in Jacksonville, Florida. So from that experience, my whole life immediately changed. Now, I didn't know my father, and my mom went on to raise five kids, you know, basically by herself. And through that experience, it just made me kind of bulletproof to some degree, right? There was I was kind of born into a situation where that adversity was already against me. I guess I wasn't born into that, right? Because I was 2 years old. But from that point forward, you know, I was never going to have a father figure in my life that, you know, those things that we typically take for granted for having a second parent, I was never going to have those things from that point forward. So we can dig a little bit deeper and talk about that later on if you'd like. But the other experience that comes to mind is my solo backpacking trip through Costa Rica that I took in 2009 before graduating from Florida State. Up until that point, you know, for 25 years, I had seen the world a certain way. And, you know, I'm thinking back to, you know, just walking along this beautiful beach in Guanacaste and, you know, in Costa Rica, Manuel Antonio, this beautiful beach and just being blown away by just how different things were, you know, the language, the culture, you know, all five senses were just running crazy. And I felt like in that moment that I had landed on another planet. It was like going to the moon. And from that point forward, you know, that I was just going to see the world differently because there was just so much more to see. There was so much more of the world to see. There were so many cultures to explore. There were so many languages to learn, people to meet. And it was kind of like being blind and kind of seeing, you know, finally having eyesight.
All right. Well, can you set the table for us just a little bit more? You know, up until that point that you got to Costa Rica, what was your life like in terms of the daily rhythms of life? What were you feeling at that point in time when you left?
Life was pretty standard. You know, the American dream, kind of go to college, get a good degree, graduate, get a good job, you know, kind of follow the path that the people have laid there before you. I just never saw myself fitting into that model after I, you know, got back from this trip. You know, travel became one of my pillars of, I guess, if you will, what I, you know, aspire to, you know, always have. And from that point forward, I made a commitment that it would forever be a part of my life.
Cool. Well, knowing your full backstory since we're buds and, of course, doing some research in anticipation of this groovy interview, I know that you previously told people that you got a major in marketing and real estate with a minor in partying. You're kind of doing real estate stuff on the side and for a while after college. I get that. I mean, I went to the University of Madison, Wisconsin, and for some reason, I don't quite know why that is a party school. Never really got into the party scene, but when I left, I was just kind of adrift, a bit like you. And I know after your pro sports dream, you weren't ever going to be an NFL player. That fell by the wayside. You got into the regular rhythms of getting a job and working in corporate life. But after that, you got way into music. And I know at one point you wanted to be a big-time DJ. You even started your own party, I think you call it, with Ignition Events in Orlando after quitting your normal job in late 2011. Tell us about that, though. There's about a decade between when you graduated to where we are now. How did you figure out that you needed to leave your job, your J-O-B job, and move on to something different, something more fulfilling?
I looked around and I asked myself a question. I looked around and I saw the older, you know, gentleman who had been in the industry 10 years or whatever. And I looked around and I saw what they had. And, you know, I asked myself, is that what I wanted to have? Is that where I wanted to be in 10 years? And the answer to that was, the answer was no to that. But I think more importantly, the question that I asked myself was, would I be able to live with regret of knowing that I could have pursued my dreams or had I went for them, or, you know, that I could give them a shot? Would I be able to wake up, I guess, you know, and when I'm 40 and my wife's next to me and my kids are asking me to make them a bowl of cereal, would I be able to live with myself knowing that I put all my dreams aside in pursuit of money, which was really what it came down to? And the answer was, if the answer was no, then I needed to make a decision and leave immediately. And that same week, I basically walked in my boss's office and told him, you know, I was leaving. I didn't know what I was going to do. It wasn't like I had a bunch of money saved up, but I felt like this was something that I needed to do. And we both kind of wept. And, you know, he told me a story, which is pretty crazy. I don't know if you've ever heard the Mexican fisherman story. Have you heard that story before?
Yeah. Yeah, I know that story. It's a great one. Actually, why don't you break it down for the people who are not familiar with it?
Okay, so you can chime in here if I don't get this right, because it's been a few years, but this is a very powerful story, and I'm gonna kind of give you the condensed, summarized version of it. But there's basically, I guess, this Harvard MBA guy who's hanging out in a Mexican fisher village, and he sees this guy kind of walk up with fish, and he goes, "Yeah, you know, so, you know, what are you doing? Tell me a little bit about what you got going on there." And the guy was saying, "Yeah, you know, I just catch fish, and, you know, now I'm heading back in town to, you know, play the banjo with my friends or whatever it is, you know, kick back and have some beers and just enjoy the time with my friends and then go home and see my family." And I guess as he got to talking to this guy, he was like, "Well, have you ever considered, you know, maybe having two boats and eventually scaling that up to a fleet of boats? And then once you have that, you can, you know, build this crazy empire and then span it to Mexico City and then maybe out to California and then somewhere on the East Coast." And then the guy, you know, basically replied, "You know, well, señor, you know, then what?" And he goes, "Well, you know, then you can, you know, kick back in a small fisherman village in Mexico and play the banjo and, you know, hang out and drink beers with your friends and enjoy time with your family." And essentially what this comes down to is, you know, they kind of went back and forth a little bit. And the guy was basically saw that what he was trying to, the end goal of what he was trying to get this Mexican fisherman village to, I guess this idea of retirement and, you know, living a simple life, was that he was already living that simple life. He was already living this lifestyle of simplicity and joy and had all the things that he already wanted without having to go out and build an empire and scale this massive company and create a bunch of competition and dominate the market. And it was kind of ironic that I was in my boss's office and he was telling me the story, because it was almost like, to some degree, he was staring in a mirror, and it was maybe him at a certain point in his life where he wanted to, you know, pursue something. And he kind of chose, you know, the fork in the road example, and he chose to go one route, and he wished he would have gone the other route.
Maybe he felt like I did for a period in my life where I didn't feel like I had a choice. I felt like there was a certain way, the default way, that I was supposed to live, that I was supposed to work, I was supposed to think, and that was it. There wasn't this shades of gray. It was just, this is the thing that you do, this is the path that you take, and you take that until maybe even you die. So maybe your boss, he was looking at himself and thinking, maybe for his whole life, and maybe even beyond that conversation that you had, "Dude, Vernon, this is awesome. Kudos to you, but I could never do that." Do you think maybe he thought that he didn't have a choice?
But we always have a choice, right? It doesn't matter where you're at. You always have a choice. And that's what people forget. Like, it doesn't matter if you're broke. It doesn't matter if you have kids. I mean, you have kids, you have a wife, you know, but you made a conscious choice that you're going to live a certain way, that you're going to impact the world a certain way, no matter what happens. So that's not an excuse. I think people cop out with these excuses saying, "Oh, well, I gotta do this because, you know, I gotta put food on my table." Yeah, you gotta put food on your table, but, you know, at some point you have to have a game plan to be working yourself out of that. You know, it can't just be that for the next 15, 20 years and you're miserable because you're gonna drag everybody else down with you.
Well, Vernon, maybe not everybody has a vision book like you do. You know that one that you created a few years ago that you use for as part of your morning ritual, and also that gratitude journal that you have? That kind of dealio?
That's awesome that you know that. First of all, you really study your guests, so that's really cool. I'm taking notes here. The vision book is, I'm a very visual person, right? So there's different types of learners, right? There's like kinesthetic, I think, audio, visual. And what I did was, and this may sound like stupid, right? Like we're going back to like when we were in like kindergarten and we're cutting out pictures. You essentially go and you cut out pictures in a magazine of places you want to go, you know, things that you want to have, the house that you want, and you put it in a book. Or you put it, some people call it a vision book, some people call it a vision board, or you put it in a, I put it in a book. And I look at this book every day. I've looked at this book every day for probably about 3-4 years. I don't know. What's cool is that these things, like for some reason, your subconscious mind will just pick them up. And if you guys know anything about like subconscious and the conscious mind, the subconscious really dominates, you know, what we, I'm no scientist, but I'm just starting to learn about all this stuff myself. It really dominates, you know, our daily lives. So you may not have to look at this, you know, every single day, but like over time, if you keep looking at it, it's going to plant the seed in your mind that, hey, this is something that I want, and call it a bunch of or not, the law of attraction is real. And then these things will start to come to you. And people may say that I'm a crockpot if they're listening to this, but I'm going to tell them a story. So in this book, I have two pictures I have of a party. One is both of them are in Ibiza. One of the pictures is a pool scene of this club called Ushuaia. It's a very popular like beach club in Ibiza. And then the other picture is it's like a place called Azul Beach. I have this vision book, right? I've had these pictures in my book for a few years. I met this beautiful Spanish girl who's now my Lucy, who's now my girlfriend, in Guatemala when I lived there last year for a month. She came to my house. She came to visit me in March of this year, 2015. We're going through this book and she goes, oh, I've been there. Oh, that's Ushuaia. Oh, that's Azul Beach. And I'm just like, I literally get like, that, you know, the hairs on the back of your neck when they stand up, that's literally what happened. So tell me that that's not real. Like, I mean, put all that together and just tell me that it's fake. And in that same vision book, I have a picture of San Juan del Sur, which is a beach town in southern Nicaragua on the Pacific coast. And I have this picture in my vision book. 2 years ago, I'm in the same spot and I take a picture of my buddy standing on this like this platform, and you can hold these pictures up side by side and it's like almost identical. It literally gave me chills.
I'm noticing a trend here. Maybe I'm the only one, but all these places that you're talking about, Azul Beach in Ibiza and this serene place, it sounds like, in Nicaragua, they're all places where people go to get away, to rejuvenate, to get a sense of who they are in themselves, slow down life a little bit. And so I'm kind of curious about that. It seems like you've been on this path to slow down, to reorient yourself a little bit. Was there a single spark that really reoriented your life towards gratitude and being able to put yourself in the shoes of other people, to imagine yourself in the place of someone else? Or has this just been kind of a subtle progression along the lines of your regular life?
Yes. And I don't think it's been one thing, right? Like, I don't think I can say, oh yeah, well, I woke up this, like, you know, and I watched a TED talk or something, or I listened to, you know, a podcast and my life was changed. You know, like, I think it's been a progression of a few things over time. Meditation, I think, has played a key role in that. Just because we're so inundated with information and we never stop to take the time to really just slow down and just to not think about anything, to just exist. and see how, where that takes us. You know, like we're always looking at our phones. We're constantly checking email. We don't ever unplug. So if you don't ever unplug, you don't ever give your brain time to kind of be present, right? Like being present. If you're not present, you don't have awareness. If you don't have awareness, how can you expect to go anywhere? You can't ever progress. Like if you're constantly on the move, you can't understand. You don't have that awareness. You know, if when you're, you know, offending your spouse, or when you're not being empathetic to certain situations, or when you're being blinded by maybe some of the things that you're chasing that you haven't stopped to consider. Hey, why do I believe this? Or, you know, why do I think this way? So I think meditation has been very key in that aspect. Another thing is that I do a gratitude journal every morning. I write down three things that, and I heard Aaron actually talk about this. I write down three things that I'm grateful for.
And by Aaron, you mean Aaron Kennard, my guest for episode 71 of Smart and Simple Matters, yeah?
Yeah, go check that out if you guys are listening. But yeah, like that, the gratitude thing, because, and this is kind of one thing that I've like really found is like, you can have absolutely nothing, Joel. You can be on the street with no money and destitute, and you can still have gratitude. How crazy is that?
It's not so crazy to me, man. I think one thing that is difficult for me, I know for a lot of people who are listening too, is how do you cultivate that mindset? You being destitute, for example, being out on the street, having no money, having no possessions, but still having a smile on your face, still being grateful. It seems like you need to have some kind of teacher, maybe even some kind of mentor at some critical point in your life that tells you, not just tells you, but shows you, that teaches you, that plants that in your brain. You can be content. You can be grateful wherever you are, whatever you have, with whatever relationships, whatever kind of work that you're doing. I'm curious, though, from your perspective, how does that work in your head?
You talked about mentorship. That's really been key. And you don't necessarily have to have someone that you get on the phone with or, you know, or mastermind with, although I think those things are extremely important. All you have to do is pick up a book, you know, or pop in earbuds and get an Audible account. That's mentorship too, you know, that people don't think about. And there's tons of great resources out there. There's tons of good books out there. I mean, I'm a huge fan of bettering myself. One of my personal goals is to become the best version I can of myself.
Give us an example. What kind of book have you read where that one-way mentorship just really seeped deep inside you?
Yeah, there's actually been a couple books that have kind of helped me in terms of meditation and yoga. It actually started with Russell Simmons has a book out called Do You, and that kind of sent me along. I'm a huge hip-hop fan and like hip-hop nerd from like the 90s, and that kind of sent me kind of on a journey looking for more books like that, which led me to like The 7 Laws of Spiritual Success by Deepak Chopra. Have you read that?
Yeah, I've read The 7 Spiritual Laws of Success. That book, about when I was starting my personal renaissance, that just about knocked my socks off. I'm digging through, oh, boom, spreadsheet up. One of my favorite quotes in any of my spreadsheets is one from that book. He talks, without uncertainty and the unknown, life is just the stale repetition of outworn memories. You become the victim of the past, and your tormentor today is yourself left over from yesterday. When you experience uncertainty, you are on the right path. Reading that totally had a mindset shift for me. That embracing of uncertainty, which I currently do and love. I love this feeling of discomfort, and I run towards it for the most part. There are still some times when discomfort is a little too disconcerting for me. But let's go back to Russell Simmons' Do You quick, because a lot of people are not familiar with it. Break that down real quick for us.
Well, it was like this guy, he was a hip-hop mogul, right? Like, he's a boss. I don't know if people know, but he like broke Run DMC and the Beastie Boys, like Def Jam. He basically like built that empire. And this guy is talking about like meditation and non-harming and just being mindful. And I'm just like, I'm like, what the hell is this guy talking about? You know, like this, he's this hip hop mogul, you know, he's supposed to be like this tough guy. And he's talking about, you know, yoga. You know, as I explored more and more, you know, it was just his journey, you know, like that was his journey, you know, led him to where he's at today. And, you know, a lot of those things he's just sharing and putting out in the world. And I'm very grateful for that because, you know, I probably wouldn't have picked up that book if it had, you know, yoga and hip hop written on it, right? It had "do you" on it, right? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do me. And, you know, going through that book, you know, I did find myself to some degree, right? Because I found that on this journey that I'm continually learning about who I am and spiritually, mentally, and pushing myself to become the better version of myself.
So that was all it took to get you to understand yourself better, to stop and start asking yourself questions. You just needed to hear about the Beastie Boys, Run DMC, and then how Russell Simmons does yoga and practices mindfulness?
It just kind of sent me searching for more, right? Because I always have this curiosity. Like once I crack open something, I can't get enough, you know, like, and that sent me to The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz, you know, books on meditation, like, okay, so wherever you go, there you are. That's by John Kabat-Zinn. I should probably do a better job and read your book more about experience curating and take down some of these things. Once I started reading John Kabat-Zinn's book, I started like doing notes in the column and kind of being more like about putting stuff out there online.
Oh, come on, Vernon. You're like 99.9999% of the human population who doesn't curate their life in Excel spreadsheets. I mean, it's for the cool kids, of course, but who doesn't do that these days? You're kind of like me in that way. I hear it in the tone of your voice. You still have some issues in terms of that internal talk. And you're just, I don't know, I wouldn't say you were putting yourself down, but I do that too. I do that in my own head. I do that verbally as well, whether it's self-deprecating. I forget. See, look at this. Now I don't even know what the appropriate phrase is for when you're putting yourself down. Comedians do this all the time. I guess my point is, don't be so hard on yourself. I've had people tell me this all the time. And have you shifted too? Because it sounds like your default nature right now is to go easy. I know you go hard. You got the hustle in you, dude. But why do you feel that there's a deficiency here? Because to me, it doesn't seem like there is.
Because I'm really, really tough on myself. I've been going through like, especially, I think, these last couple months, it's just been kind of like a really roller coaster ride for me in terms of, you know, when I make a decision, like being attached to the end result, right? Just like that attachment, you know, studying the principles and philosophy of yoga, just I attach myself too much emotionally to the outcome of certain situations. And when things don't happen the way I want them to, then I let it affect my energy levels. So if I prospect for a client and I get on a call and I spend a lot of time with that client and I tell myself that, you know, the deal is done, you know, everything, you know, that kind of like positive psychology, and then it kind of backfires because they're like, oh, well, I'm not ready. And I think this is not really going to work for me right now for my budget or whatever. And it's kind of deflating, you know, so I guess that's one example. And the other example is that my success is my success, right? Like I can't compare myself to you or another podcaster or to, you know, Bill Gates. And I think that's one thing that I struggle with a lot because I'm like, oh, I'm at this age and I'm supposed to have this. And I start judging myself based on what I have or where I feel like I'm supposed to be. And the only thing that that does is just, it's just a negative spiral effect, right? Because if I keep having those thoughts, then I'm going to just lounge around all day. I'm going to say, oh, my work's, you know, meaningless. I can't find any other prospects. You know, who am I to think that I can change the world with podcasting? You know, so it's that negative self-talk that, you know, if you sit in judgment of yourself, you really become your executioner, because the only thing it does, Joel, is just it just brings you anxiety and stress and pressure. And
hold up a second. I got two things for you. The first thing is what you just said reminded me of a quote that you shared on Facebook recently. It was a great quote. It goes like this. We become our own executioners when we sit in judgment of our efforts. Only when we act without judgment can we truly flourish in our lives. R. Gates. Not sure who the R is. Robert Gates? You might need to check your citations, my friend. But my point is, you're talking about energy and stress and all these things that just subtly or not so subtly overwhelm us, envelop us, and drag us down. No one's doing it to ourselves except for us. But I believe you have recently been getting into things like yoga. You may have even started a practice, and a legitimate yoga practice. Not that there's illegitimate ones. Some yoga is better than no yoga, in my opinion. Tell me a little bit about your experiences with those calming practices, whether it's meditation, whether it's yoga, or something else.
Yeah, and I'm no expert on it, right? I'm still learning. I actually took this 6-week class, and it was probably like one of the best things that I've ever done in a long time, aside from hanging out with people like Joel and starting podcasting. But yeah, this course, it opened up a lot of wounds and a lot of things that I in my past that I didn't even realize were demons that I was carrying or baggage that I was carrying. But I think the biggest thing is that, you know, I struggle with is attachment. So attachment to outcomes, attachment to, you know, things taken off, you know, like I want things immediately because my culture has taught me that. And, you know, like, If I can't get it now, then like I want to kind of throw in the towel sometimes. So I think the biggest one that I'm struggling with and that I'm learning to overcome is just the attachment to outcomes, situations, the way I think things are supposed to play out, because you know how I've mapped it out in my head. And
okay, stop for a second. So I'm glad that I have you on the show for a number of reasons, but you are perfectly qualified to answer something that has been rattling my head for years. I've talked to my friend Shannon Mann about this. Here's the paradox in my mind. In order to make things happen, we need to be intentional, we need to be motivated, and we need to take action. Yet so many of us fall into the trap of we need to do more, be more, bigger, better, faster, stronger. And you, I know, man, you got the hustle. That's something that I actually have maybe even deliberately lacked ever since I quit my corporate gig, is I made a decision that I didn't want to work 60-hour weeks. I didn't want to stay up until 2-3 o'clock in the morning routinely and bust my hump in order to push out a product or organize an event or whatever it may happen to be. And I see this push, this tension between a meaningful life, a life of getting things done, and a life of being content with who you are, with what you do, and having it be enough. So in your mind, I really want to know, maybe from you, maybe from the world, and people, of course, can answer in the show notes if they have something to say about this. What would a world look like without hustle? What would replace hustle as this pillar, this paragon of virtue, if everyone decided to chill the heck out and not try to hustle all the dang time?
That's a great question, and I don't have all the answers, but I can kind of give you my best answer. One, I guess I'm kind of I never think that I'm doing enough, right? Like, even all the stuff that you just said, I feel like that's not enough. So maybe that's kind of going back to that my attachment to, you know, more, or, you know, just trying to do more and just not, or I'm sorry, that would be balance, actually. Maybe that would fall under balance in terms of like yoga principles. But so how do I kind of manage both? I don't know, to be honest. I wish I could lie to you and give you a fake answer, but I just don't, man. I'm never satisfied, and I always feel like there's somebody out there that's outworking me. And
yeah, there's tons of people who are outworking you. There's a lot of people who are outworking me. Will Smith. Will Smith's outworking both of us. You know that quote? What was it? It was on some kind of late night show. Will Smith was talking about the thing that's different about him and everybody else is that he's not afraid to die on a treadmill. Die on a treadmill. He says he's not going to be outworked. Like, period. How does this go? Now I'm trying to think. This is the bad thing. When I try to go off of memory instead of a spreadsheet, never a good thing. But he's talking about how somebody else might be smarter or sexier than him. In 10 different ways, people are better than him. But if they get on a treadmill with Will Smith together, one of two things is going to happen. They are going to get off first, or he's going to die in the process. Just people aren't going to outwork him. And he thinks that it's simple, that it's this basic concept that the guy who hustles is going to be the guy who gets ahead. And the majority of people who aren't getting where they want to be or who aren't achieving being the things that they want to be, it's strictly based on hustle. I don't believe that that's true. And it's those kinds of words. By the way, I like Will Smith. I like what he has to say. But it's those kinds of words that people hear and they internalize that I think is dangerous. Is dangerous to our general well-being. Is dangerous to our ability to finally slow down and calm down and not be so obsessed with results and goals. Even goal-oriented people like me, I always have to keep in mind that the end goal, the end result, isn't necessarily what you're looking for. It's the experiences, it's the emotions that you have along the way. What do you think about that quote?
Like, for me, it's, I'm nowhere near Will Smith's level. That's a very talented man. But I don't know, man. Like, there's always something that we can be doing to hone our craft, to hone our skills. And I think another part of this is that I really enjoy what I do, so it's not really work. I love this medium. I think it's going to be one of the most impactful things when we look back 10, 20, 15 years from now, and we look at the people's lives that are changed from listening to your podcast, right? From the people that have a business and they, you know, implement podcasting into their marketing strategy. So I think that allows me to hustle as well, because I feel like I have, like, I'm like on a mission, right? It's bigger than me. And you're doing this too, you know, with Simple Revs, with your events, with your podcast, with the message that you're putting out there. Like, we're on a mission, man. Like, we don't have time to waste, because we might not be here tomorrow. What's the example they give of, you know, go in the cemetery and you'll see all these, you know, that's the richest place in the world or the wealthiest place in the world, because all these people died with their dreams inside of them. So, like, we don't have time to waste, man. Like, and there's days that I'm not motivated. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and say every day I'm like, I'm crushing it, you know. Like, yesterday I had goals that I set and I didn't hit those goals. And, you know, I was kind of like, man, you know, what's your deal? Like, I kind of fell down that rabbit hole again of judging myself and being my own executioner. So then I had to stop and say, you know what? Like, dude, relax, dude. Like, it's okay. You don't have to be Jean-Claude Van Damme every day, you know? Like, you can take a day off, you know? And like, I look at other people and they're like, oh, yeah, I work 13 hours a day. And I'm like, man, it really makes me feel like I suck. So I don't have the answer to that. I guess to kind of summarize, like, it's bigger than me, and I feel like I can't waste time because I don't have time. It's that uncertainty, you know, like living with that uncertainty You know, we don't know. Like, if you're holding on to something, Joel, that you don't put out and you're not here tomorrow, and that was supposed to be for somebody and they don't get that, then what happens? You know, what happens to that person that was supposed to get that, that was supposed to change the world, but you didn't put it out because you decided that you would rather watch Netflix that night? Or,
well, if I'm watching Netflix, it's probably not going to be Jean-Claude Van Damme movies. Although Bloodsport, man, I remember watching Bloodsport a ton when I was growing up. That was a pretty sweet movie. I'm probably watching Bruce Lee movies, though. Maybe Five Fingers of Death or Enter the Dragon. That was my jam back in the day. Haven't seen one of those in a long time. And really, I like Bruce Lee's philosophy over Van Damme's philosophy. Van Damme's going in there and he's kicking butt and he's out for vengeance. Bruce Lee is waiting for people to come to him and he's got his cool. Like, he doesn't have blood sport. He's just a calm, collected dude pretty much all the time. But I digress. We won't explore the differences between Van Damme and Bruce Lee. I don't think it's a fair comparison anyway. Not that we compare all that much, right? We don't want to fall into that trap. All right, I got to ask you one more question that I ask all of my guests, Vernon. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you would like people to know?
Well, one thing I'd like to add, Joel, that I didn't think about is that, like it's not just money for me, right? So people are like, oh, he may be hustling, but, you know, he's not this, if he's hustling and he's making all this money or whatever, he's not the simplicity dude. Like, I'm working at, like, literally just getting rid of everything I have. And my goal is to live out of two bags. So, like, that's the simplicity side, right? So, you can have the hustle and you can still have that, like, minimal lifestyle. Like, I don't want to have a lot of like, I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in having this massive house. I'd rather collect experiences and, you know, be the Mexican fisher in that village. So when the Harvard guy comes and says, hey, you got to do this, I say, no, well, this is actually how you should be thinking.
Solid words of wisdom, dude. Well, Vernon, this ain't the fantastic voyage, but I'm glad we're still on a mission to see if we can get some attention. Thanks for dropping some information. Just, you know, little additive to our education. Huh? You like that? You like the Coolio? I'm silly. All right. Why don't you tell the folks where they can get more Vernon Foster online?
They can actually add me on Facebook. I'm really people oriented. I love engagement. So you can add me on Facebook. That'll be in the show notes, that link. You can follow me on Instagram at Vernon_Foster. That's where I share a lot of my experience, travel quotes, my kind of philosophies on life, if you will. I used to say Twitter, but people don't really engage me there. So I'd say now for Facebook and Instagram.
Sweet. Well, anything else? Do you want to give us the outro? Do you want to take us out with a little fantastic voyage? You want to drop some Coolio on us too? Boom, hit us with it, baby.
Come along and ride on a fantastic voyage.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe we'll give people a little Easter egg at the very end of the show if they stick around. A little hippity-hoppity goodness. Hey, I just want to say again, I'm grateful to have you on the show. Wonderful to have your perspective. I know you'll keep grinding, but you're also going to keep slowing down at the same time. We'll compare notes. We'll see how we resolve that tension that we all feel between making an impact and taking her easy.
Thanks for having me, dude. I'm honored.
All right. Vernon Foster, I like you. I like your vulnerability. I like your authenticity. I like your humor. And I like your hustle, dude. If you like Vernon too, check out my man. Where you can find him online, you can get all that in the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM078. It's valueofsimple.com/SASM078. Got some great resources, some great book recommendations, and some other grooviness there. His Event Supremacy podcast gave me a lot of good ideas when I needed them, and I needed them badly last year when I was trying to get this Simple Rev 2014 event going. I I still listen to his gold nuggets. I still take them. I don't need as many of his gold nuggets now as I did then, but I am always interested in what he and his podcast guests have to say. Nolan Vernon, he's tapping me on the shoulder right now. He's going to be on my case if I don't tell you why our Simple Rev 2015 event on October 2nd and 3rd in Minneapolis, Minnesota is going to be awesome. Practical workshops? Yeah, yeah, we got them. Inspiring participants like Joshua Becker, Courtney Carver, and some Thunder from Down Under? We got them. An amazing venue that's perfect for deep connection, community building, story time, and offers and needs market version 2.0. We got it. And I hope you get it. And get your Simple on with us when you get your ticket to Simple Rev 2015 at simplerev.com/tickets. One more thing. Let me know how I'm doing with this show. Seriously, let me know how I'm doing with this show. You know, whether I should have more or less intentional rhymes, whether I need to kick it old school more or less, who you recommend I interview on future episodes, that kind of thing. You can send an email to joel@valueofsimple.com, a tweet to @JoelZeslowski, and all the other fun places I hang out online. Thanks for listening to the show. You are amazing yourself, and it's so fun to do this for you, generate some insight, and, well, yeah, we have fun. But now I think it's time to say toodaloo. It's now time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zeslowski, creator of All Things Value of Simple. Hey, hey, you're still here? You still listening? Cool. Just a little something new for you. This is some of the lingua franca of the funk business, and people come from miles around with an almost religious devotion to get on down. Word up.